Get away from here, Feldo! Save your father and the others!
Another arrow struck Hilgos, and the rope slipped from his paws. The old hedgehog's eyes were misting over as he gave a final roar and hurled his spiky body into the ranks of the enemy. Feldo tried to scramble back down to Hilgos, but Tolgru hung on, pulling him back.
We must escape! He gave his life so we could be free!
Feldo bit his lip until blood showed. He took one last look at the scene below. Badrang and his horde were beginning to mount the logs and scale the wall, and the slaves who had not managed to escape were forcing their way back into the compound through the gap they had made. Feldo still had the spear in his paw when he noticed who the last of the slaves was and shouted his name.
Droop!
The treacherous Bankfold did not turn. He knew who was calling him. He tried to squeeze through the gap back into the stockade, but found his way blocked by the slaves inside.
Out of my way or I'll report you!
Those were the last words that Droop spoke. Feldo threw the spear harder than he had ever thrown anything. It found its mark between the traitor's shoulder blades.
Jump!
Holding Barkjon between them, Feldo and Tolgru leaped from the wall top into the night. It was a good drop, but the straw-packed mattresses broke their fall. The others were waiting for them. They looked this way and that, unsure which would be the best direction to take in the darkness. Suddenly, a nearby rumbling caused them to crouch down in the wall shadows, and a voice rang out.
What ho! Is that the disappearing fox?
Feldo gave a sigh of relief.
Balor! I see you managed to escape safely.
Rather, though at the moment there's a posse of pirates hot on our paws. I say, have you got ladies and young'uns there?
Aye, and a wounded father, and any moment now Badrang will be coming over that wall with his horde.
Calls for a bit of quick thinking, what? Righto, get the babes, mothers and wounded into the cart. Every beast fit to run, get pushing, but wait until I give the word. Wait for it.
The sound of Clog's crew rounding the outside of the back wall blended with the shouts of Badrang and his horde, who had now reached the wall top. Balor kicked the last of the straw mattresses away into the night and joined his friends at the cart.
Head south smartly now. Look alive, you chaps. Go!
The wheels of the small wagon nearly left the ground as it shot forward, propelled by every able-bodied creature. In moments, it had clattered off into the darkness. Badrang pushed Hisk and Gudrid off the wall top. Grabbing others, he began shoving them off into space.
Jump, you lily-livered toads! The slaves did it easily enough! Come on, you there, nipwart, fleabane, jump!
Bodies went flying from the wall top. Horde soldiers shut their eyes and leaped, preferring the drop to Badrang's towering anger. The removal of the cushioning straw sacks made the landing hard for those who did not land on the heads of Cap'n Sam and Clog and several of his crew members. Balor had judged his timing right. Confusion reigned in the darkness as the Corsair crew and the Tyrant's horde fought each other tooth and claw in the night.
Chapter 19.
A monster stood on the path in front of Rose. It had the body of a fox, the talons of an owl, and a huge snake-like head with three big goggling eyes surmounted above rows of fearsome teeth. Dashing madly along to where the dreadful screams were issuing from, the Mouse Maid tried to stop at the sight of the horrendous apparition. Grum and Palom cannoned into her back, sending her staggering straight into the arms of the nightmare beast. She screamed aloud in terror as she blundered into its embrace. Then it collapsed on the path in a dusty heap. Straw, grass, bark, dead ferns and feathers swirled everywhere. Rose sneezed, spitting out a mouthful of downy fur, as Palom and Grum came gingerly forward to help her up.
Brr, what be it?
Murdop, it's nothing but a great big doll hanging from the trees by bits of creeper.
Rose dusted herself down, looking around wildly.
Where's Martin?
The horrendous screams had stopped. To one side of the path, Martin sat upon a great hollow log, chuckling quietly.
Bravo, Rose. You've just slain your first Murdop.
The Mouse Maid looked flustered.
And you, the screams.
Come over here and I'll show you.
Martin bent beside the hollow log and called aloud.
Go back, for I am the Murdop, and I will slay you.
The sound thundered and reverberated around the forest, magnified by the hollow ash log. Grum uncovered his ears when the noise faded.
But who were it doing all he's shouting?
Martin took them around the other side of the big log to where four rabbits, obviously mother, father and two young, were lying slumped.
Oh dear, you haven't killed them, Martin.
The young mouse shook his head and smiled.
Of course not. I couldn't harm creatures like these. I sneaked up and saw what they were doing. so I thought I'd take a leaf out of your book, Rose.
The Mouse Maid looked mystified. Then Martin explained.
Remember, the warrior who uses the voice instead of the sword? Well, I crept up behind them and started yelling as loud and horrible as I could. Of course, being new at this sort of thing, I suppose I underestimated the power of my cries. The rabbits seemed to freeze, then fainted right away.
Rose hurried to the side of the two babes. She stroked them tenderly until they began whimpering and moving.
Poor little things, you great bully, Martin. Fancy doing an awful thing like that.
Grum and Palom had to hide their faces to stop bursting out laughing at the sight of Martin, paws outstretched in bewilderment.
I didn't hurt them. What was I supposed to do? Set about them with my sword? Or ask them nicely to please stop terrorising travellers? You're the one who went and destroyed their Murdoch. Bully yourself.
Rose fussed about wetting the older rabbits' mouths with water until they revived. Instantly, they drew back in horror.
Oh! Go away, you savage creatures. Which one is Grum the Growler? And who is Palom the Mighty? And Rose the Slayer?
Grum tugged his snout respectfully at the female rabbit.
Tis I, ma'am. But I don't mean you no harm.
Martin took a slightly stronger line with them.
Just a moment, please. I think it's we should be asking the questions. What do you mean by shouting threats and trying to intimidate travellers on this path?
The father rabbit held a shaky paw to his brow.
Please, not so loud. We're really delicate creatures, you know. Allow me to introduce us. I'm Fescue, this is my wife, Mildwort, and these are the twins, Burnett and Buttercup. Murdop's the family name, hence the, figure we have to keep away intruders.
Oh, yes, it was Fescue's great-grandpa who built it. One never knows what horrid types of beasts want to wander abroad on our path. Please don't harm us. We were only protecting ourselves.
Rose sat by Mildwort Murdoch and spoke soothingly.
We wouldn't dream of harming a nice little family like yours. I'm sorry we frightened you, but we were rather scared ourselves with all that threatening and roaring you were doing.
Yes. Rather good, wasn't it? By the way, have you had tea yet?
Grum's stomach made a small gurgle as he rubbed it.
Usn's be allus ready for victuals, sir. Do you have soup?
Mildwort stared down a snub nose at the mole.
Hardly. Soup is not good for one at this time of day. Follow me, please.
They followed the Murdoch family down into their burrow. It was large, comfortable and spotless. Behind their backs, Palom made a snooty gesture with paw to nose, and Grum nodded in agreement. Tea was a very formal affair in the Murdoch burrow. First, the guests were given lavender-scented soap, warm water, and soft bark towels to wash and dry their paws. The two young rabbits were sent back several times until their parents were satisfied that the paws were cleaned properly. Then they all sat down at a small table. Mildwort Murdoch brought a large pot of steaming mint tea with honey to go in it, a platter of wafer-thin cucumber sandwiches, and seven tiny oat scones, each lightly spread with raspberry preserve. She seated herself, and in the silence that followed, murmured quietly to her husband.
The grace before tea, dear.
Fescue coughed gently to clear his throat. They all stared down at the spotless tablecloth while he repeated the grace.
For all we receive for tea, thanks to the seasons be, partake we sparingly of this good meal.
As they each chose a cucumber sandwich, Mildwort scolded Burnett.
Sandwiches first, scones later. Put it back, please.
Baby Burnett scowled slightly.
Scones are my favourite.
Fescue tweaked his ear lightly.
Baby Bunny should be seen and not heard, Burnett. Don't talk back to your mother. How many times must we tell you?
The meal was eaten rather quickly in polite frosty silence. Grum made a sucking noise as he drained his teacup and sat back.
Oh, they nice scones, ma'am. I'm partial to a nice scone.
So are we, Mr. Grum. There are more in the cupboard for tomorrow.
Fescue smiled nervously as he nodded agreement.
Indeed, there are, dear. No sense in overstuffing with food. You say you are bound for Noonvale. I've no idea where the place is. We've always lived by our path, never moved away. I'm afraid I can't give you any directions, but I'm sure that from here you'll have to cross the West Marshes. My advice to you is watch out for lizards. Nasty things. Cannibals, I might add.
Baby Burnett nodded and agreed with his father.
Cannibals?
Burnett.
Fescue looked severely at him.
Do not interrupt your elders and betters. You are excused from the table. You too, Buttercup. Don't stray far from the burrow and try to keep clean. Bedtime soon.
Like two silent shadows, the little ones got down from their chairs, bobbed a curtsy and a bow to the guests, and left the burrow with their mother's voice ringing in their ears.
Walk, don't run! How many times must I tell you?
As she cleared away the tea things from under the noses of the still hungry travellers, she said in a strained voice,
"You are welcome to stay the night in our burrow."
Rose kicked Grum beneath the table as he searched for crumbs.
"How nice of you, Mrs. Murdoch, but we wouldn't dream of imposing upon your good nature. Besides, we have a long journey ahead of us and we must go while there is still daylight. You mentioned cannibal lizards, Mr. Murdoch."
Fescue Murdoch helped his wife to fold the tablecloth.
"Oh, yes, so I did. Right, here's what you must do. At the edge of the forest, the marshes begin. Find the place called Marshwood Hill. If the lizards trouble you, then strike the gong you will see hanging from a hornbeam tree. The warden will take care of you. He's such a nice creature, isn't he, dear?"
Mildwort Murdoch nodded vigorously.
"Oh, yes, the warden of Marshwood Hill. A very, very nice creature."
They took their leave of the Murdochs, thanking them for a pleasant stay. Mr. and Mrs. Murdoch waved before retreating back down their burrow. Grum rummaged through the ration packs until he found some candied acorns and chestnuts. The two baby Murdochs were playing in front of the burrow, and he gave them a pawful each of the nuts.
"Here, babbies, eat 'em up nice and messy-like. They'm good and sweet."
Further along the path, Martin and Rose fell about laughing as Palham imitated the hungry Grum at tea, taking both the parts of the mole and Mrs. Mildwort Murdoch.
"Brr, I'm powerful hungry. Give all your scone, missus."
"No, no, you nasty rough mole. One is quite sufficient."
"Brr, then give all some soup, ma'am."
"Soup? Lack a season. The ruffian will eat us out of house and burrow. Go away and be off with you, you gluttonous beast."
Grum drew his ladle and shook it at Palham.
"One more word out of you and I'll raise a bump on you and spikers."
Late that evening, they reached the forest edge. Standing on a small rise, they looked down on the great west marshes, spreading as far as the eye could see. Grasshoppers chirruped in the short hill grass, and myriad swarms of flies and midges were everywhere. Rose shooed a cloud away with a dead fern.
"Phew, I'm not sleeping the night out here. Let's go back and camp in the fringe of the trees. We can face this lot in the morning."
They slumped down wearily beneath a sycamore on the beach. A slithering nearby caused Martin to jump up. Two long slow worms snaked away, hissing noisily, disturbed from their rest. The creatures made no move to attack, but Martin stood with short sword drawn, watching them slither down the side of the rise toward the marshes. Palham began collecting dry firewood and digging a shallow pit.
"It's all right. They're only slow worms. Evil-looking reptiles. They do lots of hissing, but they can't really harm you. Right, Grum, what'll it be? Cucumber sandwiches or one scone apiece?"
The mole was busy digging out some mushrooms he had found. He looked up, shaking soil from his snout energetically.
"Zoop! We'm having zoop. Aye, and I'll make a pudding too, with some apple and blackberries grown over yonder."
Night fell warm and mild, with the small fire burning red as they sat around it, well fed and satisfied with the day's progress.
"Tut, tut, Mr. Grum the Growler. If I were you, I'd put half that pudding away for the morrow. You've eaten far too much already, and it's way past your bedtime."
The mole looked up from a ladle full of pudding and snorted.
"I should have left you behind with they murk drops, Mitty. Teach you some manners."
They watched the full moon move silently from behind pillowy night cloud formations. It hung in the sky like a still new polished silver coin. The two slow worms had returned. With them was a band of lizards 20 strong. Their tongues slid silently in and out, filmy eyes blinking constantly against the dry warmth of the night. The two slow worms indicated where the sleeping travellers lay by thrusting their heads forward and hissing. The lizard leader, a great red-frilled reptile, nodded his head slowly as he watched the glow from the red embers of the fire dying lower. Soon the fire would be cold, and the four travellers deep in sleep. The lizards waited patiently.